Here we go. Yes, it's working. Okay.
So let's get right to it. We're going to begin on the bottom of page Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph in Masechet Shabbos. This is the seventh perek of Masechet Shabbos, Perek HaGadol, which is the perek that focuses on the basics of the introduction to the Lamedes Malachos. Now you will ask me what happened for the last 72 blots, and I will tell you that quite a bit happened, but Chanukah happened, and that's on Daf Chaf Aleph. The initial discussion, the Gemara began with Hotza'ah, carrying, which is the reason for that, and a lot of the discussion until this point has been about carrying, cooking, and a few other Erev Shabbos topics. But now is really where the Gemara gets into what we are going to call the Avos HaMalacha, the key Malachos, the 39 categories of work in Masechet Shabbos. But, another note of introduction is that, as many of you know, I learned in Yeshiva University. I'm really from Baltimore, Maryland. And I learned in Yeshiva University, before that I learned in Kiryat Yavne, and I learned in Yeshiva University, and many years I studied under Rav Herschel Schefter Shlita. So one of the Masechtas that I studied with Rav Schefter was Masechet Shabbos. So many of the things that I'll say, even if I don't say them consciously, are things that I've heard, and if they're correct and they make sense, that we can attribute them to Rav Schefter. So let's begin. We're beginning on the bottom of page 9, Gimel Aleph. The Gemara tells us, in the Mishnayos, Avos Malachos Arboim Chaser Achas. Avos Malachos, how do we translate Avos Malachos?
The general categories.
Right, the main categories of work on Shabbos are Arboim Chaser Achas. They are 40 minus 1, 39. And we'll get back to how we know that. Hazorea, let's just go through them initially. Hazorea, Zorea means planting. Choresh, plow, Havah Choresh, and the plowing, or one who plows. Zorea means one who plants. Vahachoresh, one who plows. Vahakotzer, and one who harvests. Vahama'amir, and one who gathers. Vahadosh, and one who literally means threshing, but the way that we translate it practically is extracting. And again, we're going to hopefully go over the course of time as we see the Gemaras, the different practical applications and the sugyas as they relate to each of these. Vahazore, winnowing. What's winnowing? There we go. And that itself spreads apart the chaff from the kernels. Vahaborer, one who selects. Hatochen, one who grinds. Vahamarakid, one who sifts. Vahalosh, one who kneads. What's that?
Needs.
Lush is kneading. Vahaofe, baking. Hagozes es hatzemer, someone who shears the wool. Hamalavno, from lovon, means?
Bleaching.
Right, whitening. Vahamenafzo, menafet means to comb out, to untangle, like a cotton gin type of thing.
Like carding.
Carding, yes. Vahatsovo, and someone who dyes the wool. Vahatove, what's tevia?
Weaving.
I know. Close.
Braiding.
What do you do after you comb out the wool? Oh, so let me tell you. You ready? Let me tell you.
No.
There's a thing. Spinning.
Yeah.
Oh, very. See, I highly recommend. There's a place in upstate New York. You've heard of New York, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a big state on the East Coast. A very large state. So I used to live there. So upstate New York, there's a town called Rochester. Now near Rochester, many of you have heard of Rochester. Have you ever heard of Mumford? Mumford, New York, is a tiny town about a half hour from Rochester, where they have collected about two dozen homes from colonial America, buildings that they reconstructed or they had up there. And what they did is that they created this type of demonstration. It's kind of like Colonial Williamsburg, but a little bit more compact, where they show you exactly how they lived life in America in the colonial times. So if you ever happen to be in Mumford, they will demonstrate to you how exactly you go from the process of shearing all the way till making clothing. So one of the things is that they do is called spinning. What's spinning? You take a clump of threads, and basically what you do is, to get the threads to look like a jacket or a shirt, you have to put one thread on top of the other, essentially in a clump, and spin it so that it stays taut, and that will give it strength. Otherwise, all your shirts will fall apart. Okay. Vahamesach. Now this is called mounting the warp. We're now going to talk about something that I really do not know very much about, and that is the arrangement of a loom. A loom is a contraption that creates cloth. So one of the malachos on Shabbos, one of the malachos is mounting the warp, is setting up this loom. Okay? If you've noticed, there's a trend. The first trend was how to bake bread, what we call sidura de pas. The second trend is how to make clothing. These are all creative activities. On Shabbos, the avos malachos, all of these main categories of work are about one thing, and that is creativity. We are prescribed not to do any creative malacha on Shabbos. If you want to know why and all about that and the practical halacha Shabbos, that's Monday nights at 9. Okay. Just a unpaid advertisement. V'ha'osa shtei bati nirin. Now this is a big machlokas what this means, but again it has to do with arranging the strings in your loom. Yeah, and there are holes that you, the way that you put the string through and pull it up and down. V'ha'oreg shnei chutin. And this I understand. If you weave, weaving is like this, right? You take threads and you send them back and forth, over and under. If you weave two threads. V'hapotzea shnei chutim. And if you remove two chutim, two threads, again, having to do with setting up this loom. Next case, again, similar but not exactly the same. Hakosher, tying, now this is a little more closer to home, tying things on Shabbos. V'hamatir, and untying. Va'tofer shtei tfiros, and tofer means sewing. So shtei tfiros means two stitches. Ha'korea amenas litfor. What if I rend a cloth? I rip it, but why am I ripping it? For the purpose of refashioning it. Mm-hmm. If I rip it in a destructive manner, that's not called an av malacha. The malacha has to be for some constructive purpose. Then, therefore, it must be ripping for the purpose of re-sewing. Tofer amenas litfor. And again, the Gemara is going to go through each one of these, what it's all about. So then the Gemara says, further the Mishnah says, Hatkorea amenas litfor shtei tfiros. By the way, parenthetically, usually when you have, the rule of thumb is, in the Gemara, when you have brackets, you put them in. When you have parentheses, you take them out. So in this case, it's korea amenas litfor shtei tfiros. Fine. Hatsad svi, someone who traps an animal. We just gave a deer just as, you know, something that may come along in your home. Hashokto, if you slaughter it. Now we're getting into a discussion about hides. If you slaughter an animal, v'hamapshito, and if you skin the animal, hamolcho, if you salt it, v'hamabed esoro, if you tan the leather, v'hamamachko, if you smooth it out, v'hamachatko, and if you cut it. Now, cutting it specifically to size. Now, all these things all have big practical ramifications, and that's the Hilchot Shabbos on Monday night is really the more practical. This is more sugya-oriented. So we're not going to talk about every single detail of what it means cutting and how it relates to toilet paper and all that other kind of stuff. That's, like, beyond the scope of this shir. Hakosev shtei osios. Someone who writes two letters. The minimum shir for writing to be chayav is two letters. The Gemara is going to describe why that is. That's going to get to Perek Habone. That's a while later, 12th parak. V'amochek almenas lichtov shtei osios. If you erase for the purpose of writing, so essentially the malacha of erasing is not really about erasing, it's really preparing something for writing. What I'm doing is I have a piece of paper that's full of ink. I can't write with it now. So I erase what's there to enable me to now write something else on it. Again, you notice the trend that these malachos are constructive. They're not destructive. They are what we call meleches tikkun. They are not meleches kilkul. Kilkul would be destructive. Yes, Sarah?
If you had something that you were writing and you noticed, you know, on Shabbos that you had made a mistake, would erasing that mistake fall under the same category of erasing in order to...
Well, are you going to rewrite it in a correct fashion?
Either you're Well, I was thinking if there's something there that shouldn't be there, but, you know...
Very good. The Achronim discussed this question. What if a certain case erasing itself is finishing?
Yeah.
So that's a good question. The Achronim deal with that. What if that? Do we look at it from the narrow? This is a discussion. The Achronim. Do we look at it from the narrow, limited focus of exactly what you're doing? So you're doing a Maisa Mechika, which is not Almanas Liftov. It's not for the purpose of rewriting. Or do you view it as part of the larger question? The opposite is true, by the way. The same question comes up in the Achronim in the opposite. Let's say you write something. Let's say you went to a museum. You ever been to the National Gallery in London? Nice place. They have a lot of artwork there. Let's say you walked into the National Gallery in London and you took a pen and you signed your name on a Rembrandt original. I did Kosev. So is that called the Malachas Tikkun because I did Psiva? Or is that called the Malachas Kilkel because I ruined the painting? Okay? That's a big question in Acharonim. It's related to what you're asking, which is it defined locally or is it defined more broadly? So that's a good question. Not for this minute, but we should come back to that at some point. Weiter. Habone, someone who builds, Vahasoser, someone who destroys. Now, Tosa is going to point out, again, it's not purely for the purpose of destroying, it's you're breaking it down so that you can build something in its place. I had an old shed, I'm going to break the shed so that I can create something better, a new shed, an addition, you know, something for my pet, whatever. Hamachabe, someone who extinguishes, and again, this is actually a discussion of what it means extinguishing. So the Gemara says earlier in Shabbos, in this case, what extinguishing minat Torah, the av malacha is, what you did is you took a wooden charcoal and you extinguished it to create a charcoal. Meaning, how do they have charcoal? They take a piece of wood, they burn it, then they shut off the fire, so now you have a nice piece of charcoal to light. Or in those days, they were taking a wick. If you let's say in my house on Erev Shabbos, when it's not terribly hectic, thank God more often than not, on Erev Shabbos, one of the things that my father does, and that thank God I do in my home, is that I will light the Shabbos candles before my wife lights them. And I blow them out. And why do I do that? Because when you singe the wick, it's easier to light. So that's my contribution, well, usually more than that, but that's my contribution to preparing for Shabbos. So what I'm doing is I am making it easier for her. I'm creating some ash on the edge of the wick to make it easier for her to light. So in that case, when I extinguish the flame, I'm actually extinguishing it to create this, either because I want charcoal or because I want to create a more easily lightable, is that a word, easily lightable? Mm-hmm. Maybe. Wick. So that's, again, we're keeping an eye out that all these malachos are malachas tikkun. They're not malachas kilkel. They're not destructive, they're constructive. Vahamavir, someone who ignites. And the last two are hamaka b'patish, someone who hits with the patish, the hammer. Hamotzi merishus l'rishus. The last malacha is the malacha called hotzah, carrying. Now, Tosfos and Daf Gimel of the Beis, Tosfos earlier in the Masechta points out there's something unusual about hotzah. What is unusual? What's that?
It's not creative.
Very good. Thank you. That's what Tosfos doesn't spell that out, but the Orza Ruah, Rav Yitzchak of Vienna, living in none other than Vienna, he lived in the late period of the Rishonim. If I'm not mistaken, I once came across an Or Zeruah, or someone told me an Or Zeruah, who says exactly what Sarah just pointed out, that there's one distinction from this malacha to other malachos and Tosfos. Again, when we talk about the Gemara, we're talking about a lot of different people here. The middle part of your page was composed, it was edited by Ravina Ravashi in Bavel in the 5th century. The inside, oh, here's a good trick. Anytime you open up a Sefer Halacha, or usually most Sfarim, you will find that the inside commentary is the older commentary. Hence, on the inside of your Gemaras, you find the Rashi commentary. Rashi lived about the year, he died about the year 1025, 1020 to 1105. Tosfos, who's on the outside, is a collection... Tosfos on the outside of the binding is a collection of commentaries compiled, I would say, in the early 1300s by grandsons of Rashi, but also living in France. If you go today to a tiny village about half-hour train ride northeast of Paris, you will find a little village called Troyes. You been there? What's that? Yeah. So if you go there... Very good. So if you go there, you will actually find in this tiny French town of 500 French peasants, none of them Jewish, you will find a memorial to Rashi today. A large sculpture that says Grand Rabin Rashi something or other. Okay? And you could probably pay a tour guide to tell you where his house was. But yeah.
What did she say about what was different about
Hotzah? Oh. Not creative. Right, so it's not creative. That's what we're going to say. We began by saying that all the Avos Malacha, they are creative. Yet Hotsa is not creative. Why? Because there's nothing that changes about the item. You're just transporting it from one location to another. Hence, says Tosfos in Daf Gimel on the base, the malacha of Hotsa is in fact an inferior malacha. It's what he calls a malacha grua. And that has several ramifications. If we make it till the 24th, the last chapter, the 24th chapter, that's where some of the interesting comes up. No, the truth is that it came up in the first parak, it comes up again in the 11th parak. We'll have to really move fast to do that. So that is interesting that Meleches Hotzah does make it to the list. Mm-hmm. Albeit a Malacha Grua, it does make it to the list. I once was privileged to hear a shir from one of my Rabbeim, Rav Michael Rosenzweig Shlita, where Rosenzweig pointed out, he gave about a 3-hour shir discussing whether the concept of Hotzah being an inferior Malacha still has relevance today. Meaning the fact is, on the one hand, it's called the Malacha Grua by Tosfos, and the Rishonim recognize that it's different, yet it's in the list. So are there any vestiges of that Malacha Grua-ness, again, new word, is that still retain itself, Halacha L'maisa? That's a question we should consider. Okay. Hari Einu Avos Malachos Arboim Chasarachas. These are the Avos Malachos 40-1. So already you can see there is some question that's going to arise as to, we seem to repeat ourselves. The first time around it said Avos Malachos Arboim Chasarachas, and then we say it again at the last Mishnah, at the last line of the Mishnah, Hare Elu Avos Malachos Arboim Chasarachas. And we know that when it comes to the Mishnayos, there are no freebies. They don't list things for no reason. Well, the Gemara is going to discuss a lot of different reasons why it is they are 39. Okay, but before we move on, yeah.
Why, with some of the malachot, does it specify an amount and with some it just
very good.
States?
Oh, you hear this? Yeah, could somebody summarize Sarah's question?
Why for some of them does it give an amount, like 2 stitches, 2 letters, and for some things it doesn't give any amount?
Okay, your name again?
Bracha Yudkovsky.
Okay, Mrs. Yudkovsky points out exactly what Sarah is illustrating for us, that there are some where it tells us the shear. For example, Hakosev Shtei Osios, right? Or, what else did we have? We had a couple of more. Hapotzea Shnei Chutin Haoseh Shtei Bonirim. Certain of these are 2, some of them are just Habonim. So now, the truth is that some of them, the shear is the most minimal shear. So for example, Bonet, the shear for Bonet is the smallest amount that could possibly be significant for a builder. So that could be a tiny hole like this, that would already be a shear, because you can make something in terms of constructive building. But okay, well, let's take that aside. Let's say, for example, Hotzah. There is a shear for carrying out. For example, carrying food. If there's no Eruv, you're not allowed to carry a grogeris, a fig, a fig's amount of food out into the Rishus Rabbim, to the public domain. So why is it that it doesn't mention that? It's a tremendous kasha. You know who asked that kasha? Tosfos asked that kasha. And not only does Tosfos ask that kasha, Tosfos leaves that kasha in its tzarachim. He leaves it open. Tosfos, you know, once we got it, usually the method is going to be Rashi first, Tosfos second. And the important thing to keep in mind, just as we know in the study of the Gemara, I once took class, one of the greatest classes I ever had in college or graduate school was with Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik. So it was about a class in the introduction to Rishonim. So one of the points that Dr. Soloveitchik made, aside from putting the fear of God in us, is that Rashi and Tosfos serve a different function on the page. Rashi is the smoother. Now, obviously, I didn't use that word, but that's my word for it. Rashi is here to smooth out pieces of the text that don't fit. Or is like, you know, one of those road pavers. When there's a hole, he fills it in. And when there's a little bit of a bump, he flattens it out. So when there's an irregularity in the text, Rashi is going to come and smooth it out. And when there's something missing, when there's something that I don't understand just reading through, Rashi is going to iron that out. Tosfos will usually not do that. The function of Tosfos, which is the genius of the Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Tam was Rabbeinu Yaakov, the grandson of Rashi, who initiated the dialectical movement in terms of questions and answers that kind of revolutionized the study of Gemara just 2 generations after Rashi. The purpose of Tosfos is usually not to smooth out the text. It's really to assess this sugya in its entirety, and especially this sugya in its entirety in light of other sugyas and shas. So for example, Rashi will almost never bring in something from somewhere else unless it's absolutely necessary for understanding the pshat of this local sugya. Now, he's very precise, and sometimes he answers questions just with one word. He answers very often the same questions that Tosfos bothered by. But it's not like Rashi's going to say, oh, you know, I came across a Gemara in Sukkah the other day, and it's really troubling me for this Sukkah. That's a Tosfos kind of question. All right, but it's interesting. Tosfos in this case picks up on the question that you raised. Ta'osa shnebati nirin, left side, middle dibra maskil. Sarech lefarish. We need to explain Tosfos dibra maskil ha'osa. Lama pirish kan uba oreg. Why does it say here, meaning the shnebati nirin, and in the case of oreg, and potzea uba tofer, and in the what do you call it, sewing uba kosev shir tfei mi bishar. Why did we illustrate this? Tfei, they shear the amount that's required. Mi bishar, tfei means more. Mi bishar than the other cases. So that's a very good question. So maybe we should deal with this now. Yeah, we can deal with this now. So I once heard an answer to this, and I seem to recall that I could find it, and I did find it. I found it in the following sefer that I have in my library. One of my teachers, I have many teachers, you see. One of my teachers at YU, one of my rabbeim, his name is Rabbi Yonason Sachs. And Rabbi Sachs, by the way, you can get probably a lot more than you'll ever hear from me. Everything is on. This is not a paid advertisement, although it is running. You can get everything on YU Torah. YUTorah.org, you can basically be introduced to all of the great rabbis who are teaching and have taught at YU and who have really impacted my learning. So I found in Rabbi Sachs' Sefer the Teretz that I remember to this Kasha, based on the following observation. There is a Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma raises the issue about what we call a chatzi shir. What does a chatzi shir mean?
Half an amount.
So for example, let's say on Yom Kippur, a person, lo aleinu, they didn't fully appreciate, they didn't understand what it means to fast on Yom Kippur. They didn't understand, and they went to the restaurant, they ate on Yom Kippur. So eating on Yom Kippur, we know, is a very serious offense. What if they didn't eat a full shear, which is a grogeris, again a fig, koseves agasa? What if they ate only half? So what kind of violation is that?
That's
a question.
Balasar, isn't it?
Oh, so that's a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Is chatzi shear asur min haTorah or not? So Rabbi Yochanan suggests that chatzi shear is asur min haTorah. It's actually a biblical violation to even eat half on Yom Kippur. And by the way, it doesn't mean half. It can mean a third or a quarter or an eighth. So if you take a drink of 7-Up on Yom Kippur, even if it's the slightest amount, that would already be, according to Rav Yochanan, which is the way we assume, that a chatzi shir, a part of a shir, is already an issur d'oraisa, a biblical violation. So if that's the case, what do you need a shir for? The answer is for malchus, for lashes. The only time Beis Din would ever haul you in and give you a punishment is if you ate the requisite shear. But the core machlokas is about just any old size. And why is that? So he quotes a pasuk called kol chelev. The word kol is extra to include even a small amount of chelev. Chelev is not what you're going to find when you open up your hamburger. It's going to be the fat that is trabered away. It's not, you know, it doesn't even make it to the butchers. In Romanian, it's the bottom half of the animal that they cut off and they sell to Goyim right away. The bottom half of the animal, there is fat, not the fat that we see, it's special fat near the intestines and the liver called chelev, which is an isser, a serious isser. What's that?
Suet.
Okay.
Suet.
That's what it is. So if you eat chelev, you're in violation of an isser d'oraisa, and kol chelev means you can eat. You shouldn't eat even a slightest drop from a Torah perspective. But not only that, so the Gemara says, also, Rabbi Yochanan says, it's also chazilet starufe. It could potentially accumulate to more than that shear. So that's what we call a chatzi shear, that the Torah is telling you, you better not eat half a shear, because if I eat half a shear, well, let's say I took 2 bites of a sandwich on Yom Kippur, lo aleinu, and then I took another 2 bites, and now, lo and behold, I ate a whole thing. Okay, that is the discussion over there. That's the discussion in the Maseches Yuma. So the Achronim, beginning with the Chacham Tzvi lived at the same time as Rembrandt in the early 1600s in Amsterdam. The Chacham Tzvi has a discussion about whether does this concept of chatzi shir apply elsewhere in the Torah. So Chacham Tzvi assumes for himself, he assumes that it should not apply, because he says it only makes sense to talk about it in terms of food, because that's chazilet starufa. You could accumulate bites and bites and bites of food. But does that make sense in terms of other areas of halacha. Let's say, I don't know, what's another area of halacha that would have a shir? Not eating. Okay, writing on Shabbos. We'll get this. We're bringing it over to writing on Shabbos. Would it apply to writing on Shabbos? As the Chacham Tzvi wouldn't apply. Chatzisha would not apply on Shabbos. Okay, that's one piece of the discussion. Does the general principle of Chatzis Shir apply outside of Machalas Asuras? That's a machlokas. Oh. But that's a discussion all about Chatzis Shir, about half of a requisite amount. Maybe there's something else which could exist in the realm of Shabbos. Because in the realm of Shabbos, you don't just have what we call a shir bekamos, a shir in an amount. We also have creative activities that you're trying to achieve. You're trying to do something. You're trying to make a contribution. So the Meiri, on Daf Gimel on the base earlier in Shabbos about taking out, is the first one to kind of hint, Daf Gimel, first one kind of hint, that there may be another concept, not just what we call Chatzis Shir, which is half of the requisite amount, but there may be things where if you don't do the full malacha, anything short of that itself would not even constitute a Chatzis Shir, it would be a Chatzis Malacha. Chatzis Shir would be something that could lead up to something else, and therefore it itself has stringency to it. As opposed to a Chatzis Malacha, if you did less than that, less than the Shir Malacha, it's not even significant at all. It's like a zero, as opposed to a 0.5. So that's the construct. We'll get back to developing that in a second. But I remembered that there was somebody, and I found that this is Rabbi Sachs Teretz, to your Kasha on Tosis Kasha. Tosis leaves the question as, wait a second, why is it that in some malachos, it tells me that it has to be, for example, Shtei Osios? Why doesn't it just tell me Hakosev, one who writes? So the answer is, perhaps, one suggestion, there are other suggestions that he quotes, but one suggestion is that these malachos are what we call a... Let me introduce you to one more person. There was a man who lived in the turn of the 20th century in Dvinsk. Anybody heard of Dvinsk? Anybody know who lived in Dvinsk? This is a trivia question. Very good. With Meir Simcha, the author of the Or Sameach and the Meshech Chachma. But he was not the only man to live in Tvinsk. It was someone else. But Meir Simcha was a Litvak, a Lithuanian. Tvinsk was a Lithuanian town. But there was a chassid, a Lubavitcher chassid, who was a genius, whose name was Rabbi Yosef Rosen, known as the Rugged Shover Gaon. Now, the Rugged Shover Gaon was a fantastic genius, unbelievable. If you look at his comments on the Rambam and Chumash, Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher, who lived earlier about 30, 40 years ago, he spends his whole life trying to decode what the Rugged Shover writes, because everything is shorthand. He had very long hair. He had long hair because he would never take off his kippah for a haircut, and he would tie his hair to the back of his chair so he would never fall asleep when he was learning. Okay? The Rugged Shover Gaon was tremendous. Tremendous. So Rav Shechter once quoted this similar yisod that appears elsewhere in the Achronim from the Rugged Shover Gaon, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Rugged Shover Gaon said the following lashon. His lashon was, it's what we call a sheer nekuda. Nekuda means a point. It's a sheer nekuda. Anything less than this is nothing. As opposed to a sheer bekamos, a sheer in amounts, you know, cumulative sheer is different. So what Tosis perhaps is telling us, that these malachos are, in the Rogachover's language, a sheer nekuda. Anything less than two osios is a nothing. As opposed to, let's say you did a chatzis shir of bone, you did a minuscule amount of bone, that would constitute a chatzis shir. And according to some, that would be a malacha, maybe an issur. It wouldn't be a full malacha, it may be an issur d'oraisa, it may be an issur d'rabbanan. And this is what Rabbi Sachs develops. If you want to take a look, the name of his sefer is the Chemdas Yamim. And he has a discussion here about chatzis shir malacha Shabbos, where he proves it for the Rambam. We don't have time to look at it tonight, but it's very much off the daf. But he actually uses this to answer this to Akasha. He suggests these are two different types of shiurim in Malacha Shabbos. One is a shiur that achieves the field on the Malacha, the shiur Bekamos, and then there's the shiur Shebil Adav, Lo Mikri Malacha. So Kosi would be a shiur Nekuda. Anything less than two letters is a nothing, or as opposed to Bone, which would be a Chatzis Shiur, not a Chatzis Malacha. Okay, and he proves this from several different sources, from the Rambam, and this Meiri that we quoted in Gemara Beis. The Lashon of the Meiri is, Arki Ma'alav B'Pirusha Sha'af L'dasa Omer Ba'alma Yeshu Yelachak Yishir, which is a Machlokas earlier, we skipped that, those two blocks, it's very technical, in Kehain Kol Garo. Modu B'zu Shalom U'kein Ela Kishasa Yisr Ba'alama, etc. Abel Hotsa. She'ina Ika Malacha L'maisa Ika Achiyuk Ba'anamu because it didn't exist in the Mishkan. To lo shayach ella bepas. That only ba'ofe baking only applies to bread. Bepas lo shayach the melechas haMishkan, and there was no bread in the melechas haMishkan. Aval kulu kamaisa. All of these first things that we thought had to do with bread, hafiyah besamonim shel tzeva, were in the samamonim, the dyes of the coloring. Tchelas va'argam on the blue, the purple of the tolah shani, and the threads of red. The Gemara parech to shanik, and Rashi says the Gemara itself asks to shavik tana mavashel. The Tana, the author of the Mishnah, abandoned shavik means he left alone. Mavashel, the phrase it should have said the word mavashel cooking. The habib b'samamonim that did exist in the spices. The nakat ofe, and it chose it used ofe baking. The shiuran period. But before the Shiuran. So Rashi is just telling you that he's quoting the Gemara, where the Gemara is troubled. Why did it abandon Ofe and quote Mavashel? It quoted Mavashel. It quoted Ofe instead of Mavashel. So everyone here chimed in with a troubling question. What was that question?
The
Lashon HaPanim. So what do you think? It's a good kasha. So, this was made famous, at least to me, by another person we should meet. We should have like a meet and greet here. This is what this is what's going on. There was a Rebbe, a Chassidish Rebbe, close to my heart, a Chassidish Rebbe who lived a little less than 100 years ago. His name was Rabbi Avram Bornstein. He was known as the Sachachava Rebbe, and he authored a set of tshuvas, a very important set of tshuvas called the Avnei Nezer. Now, the Avnei Nezer did not just author tshuvas responsa, he also authored important work on Melech HaShabbos called the Eglei Tal. So the Eglei Tal goes through all the Lamedes Melachos with the Pirush on the side, and the Eglei Tal, the Sachachava, he raises this issue and cites that it's actually a machlokas. It boils down to the following machlokas. We like to say that the Melachos are predicated on what went on in the Mishkan. And that's learned from Gemara earlier and from many different sources. It's interesting that it's not 100% clear exactly how we got from Shabbos to Mishkan. The most famous way is...
They weren't allowed to build...
Right, how do you know that? Exactly, they're juxtaposed at the beginning of Parashas Vayakel, which appears in a Medrash, in a Mechilta de Rabbi Yishmael. But interestingly, as far as I have found, it never actually appears in the Gemara. It appears in a Rashi and Chagiga, Yudam Adbeis, Tosfos quotes it, but I think the earliest known source to me is the Mechilta, which is parallel to the Gemara, so that's fine. It's not the... What's that?
The earlier too.
Right. So there's this juxtaposition. So the Eglei Tal says, well, which aspect of the Mishkan are we learning from? You could really think of it in two ways. Are we learning it from the functioning of the Mishkan? Or are we learning it from the building of the Mishkan? Mm-hmm. So, this is, of course, like everything else good, is a machlokas. Rav Haigon, who lived already the 8th century, 9th century, something like that, Rav Haigon is of the opinion that the Melech HaShabbos is predicated on the functioning of the Mishkan. Whereas Rashi and others would maintain the Gemara is more mashma. This Rashi is really rooted in the Gemara. They would suggest that no, it's not that we're learning it from the functioning of the Mishkan, we're learning it from the way that they built the Mishkan. So therefore, correct. In the building of the Mishkan, they didn't bake anything to build the Mishkan, but they did need to cook. They needed to cook the dye to create the wool for the Mishkan. Okay? So this is an ongoing debate. So this may be one flashpoint of their machlokas, and there are several others. Some of the nafkaminas may be what we call an av versus a tolda. The Gemara says later on Daf Tzadi Zion that anything which is going to be an av had to have been in the Mishkan. It had to have been patterned. Everything is patterned after the Mishkan, so all the avos had to have been in the Mishkan. And everything else, even if it's a biblical prohibition, is what we would call a tolda. Tolda means a derivative. These 39 categories are the main categories. We're going to turn the page and we're going to see a whole bunch of derivatives, toldos, things that are extracted, also biblical. And therefore, the practical difference between an av malacha and a tolda is not huge, but there is a significant difference, as we'll see maybe when we turn the page. There is a difference. The point for us is that this coincides seemingly against the Rabbeinu Haigon from the fact that he emphasizes that Ofer, baking, did not exist in the Mishkan. He's assuming that we're following the building of the Mishkan, not the functioning of the Mishkan. And again, one of the practical differences between these two opinions may be what's called an Av, what's called a Tolda. Maybe for Rashi, maybe, Ofer is only a Tolda, maybe. I think about it. This comes up in the Eglei Tal. Next Rashi, finishing that Rashi. V'shi'uran shel elu, and the shear for these things, eres, boresh, digging, dipaku, that you're in violation, if it's a kolshu, lekamon, later on, lekamon means later on, b'perakabone, in perakabone, 12th perak. Fine. Hagozeis zemer, we've now moved on, says Rashi. V'kol shar malachos shaychi b'tzemer shel malachos ha-mishkan. All of the other malachos are shayach, are relevant to the wool of the malachos ha-mishkan. Ha-malabno, one who whitens it. How do you whiten it, says Rashi? Mechabso b'nahar, cleaning it in the river. Ha-menafu, kar kibbalas, ha-mizach, Again, some French term that I'm not familiar with, flies. Bati nirin, again, something else. So Rashi tells you, shenasan shnei chutim, that you pass the two chutim, the two threads, besochayir thing, all these other ones are the so for sheer or from the warp is exploding. I think we're not going to get to hapotzi. You rip it apart. So again, ripping apart, isn't that destructive? So he says, no, it's not. Because when sometimes when you have two strings that are too long, umenatik mehen, and you rip them off, umaklishon lutzorech, and you weaken them for a purpose. What you're trying to do is just basically shorten them down. All of these malachos, Rashi tells you, existed in the urios, the curtains, the cloth that exists in the Mishkan. So Rashi already told us, again, Rashi was asking a question and he was answering it. Rashi's question was, where did you get this from? And Rashi's answer is, I got it from the Malachos HaMishkan. So the scoop he thought existed for the Samamonim. Samamonim are keep that over there so you can hold on to it. Samamonim are, let's say, planting herbs, whatever spices needed, harvesting them, all that stuff. And now we're moving on to how they created the urios. Vaitrashi, the tofer v'koreh v'urios who also existed in the cloth. Al menas litfor. You are korea, you rip almanas litfor for the purpose of sewing. Pa'amim, that what? Shanekev agbol. The whole yoch yafeh, and you can't sew it up nicely, elein kein korov, unless you tear it a little bit. I guess you have to tear it a little bit on the top and a little bit on the bottom, so it shouldn't look like faklumped or something, you know, like, that's why you have to tear. So that type of tearing is in order to make it look better. You have a hole, you gotta tear it a little bit, and that will ease the way that you sew it together. That's Rashi's explanation. Right. Can have a farish b'gemara. Avol, korea shelo litfor, but tearing it without the purpose of tofer, sewing it up, lo habi b'mishkan. That did not exist in the Mishkan, just tearing for the purpose of tearing. Hatzod es hatzvi. Hunting the deer. V'kol meleches oro, no heges bitchoshim lemishkan be'oro seyen. All of the malachos that appear in this context of hides existed in the Mishkan for the tachashim. What's this? Exactly. On the Ol Moed, there was one cloth that wasn't, there was one covering that wasn't cloth. It was animal skin, called the tachash.
It's not a dog.
What's that?
It's not a dog. You'll see in English translation.
A dove? Really?
A dolphin.
Oh, a dolphin. No, it can't be. It's not a dolphin. Right. It's not a dolphin.
It
may have been a unicorn. That's the question. The Gemara does discuss early in the Masechta what was the tachash. Maybe it was a unicorn. It had to have been a kosher animal. Maybe
unicorns are kosher? Wouldn't unicorns be similar to horses?
Well, it may be a Jew's cousin, has split hooves. If I had one, I would tell you. Maybe it's a unicorn, maybe it's some other type of animal. It had to have been a kosher animal. Whatever it was, this animal was skinned and treated for purpose of being one of the coverings of the Mishkan. So Rashi, again, is troubled. How did these get into the list? The answer is they existed for the tachash. Hamolcho l'or. If you salt the ore, now it doesn't. Hopefully, we'll get to this. If you salt the skin, part of the tanning process is salting it. Megarer mamachko, megarer saoro. What is mamachik? Mamachik is smoothing. So there are two ways. There are two ways to smooth something out. The av malacha of smoothing, Rashi says, is megarer saro, is to scrape off. Okay? Like they have on those dermatology commercials. You know, there's always the bumpy skin, right? So there are two ways to deal with bumps, bumpy skin. You can scrape off the bumps, or you can fill it in with a cream that they'll sell you. Right? Those are two, and those are the two halves of the malacha. We're going to get to it. One is called mamachik. Smoothing. Now, mamachik, Rashi explained to us, is by scraping off.
But there's also the opposite malacha, which we're not going to see here, but we're going to see when we get to the Gemara, called memareach. It's also smoothing a surface, but the opposite way. Instead of scraping off the bumps, you fill in between the bumps. So that's what Rashi's explaining to you. What's going to be the av? What's going to be the tolda? What exists in the Mishkan? The scraping of the hair off of the hide. Good. Mechatcho. Rashi says, Mechatzo u'mechatcho l'ritzuos v'sandalin. You measure it out, you mark it off, and you cut it for strips and for shoes. Kosev u'mochek. Writing and erasing, lakama mefarish lomaimi boy b'mishkan. The Gemara later in Perakabone is going to describe what you need it for Perakabone. In Perakabone, which is the 12th Perak, we keep alluding to that. And what was that? Shekein roshmin al karshe hamishkan leida eza ben zugo. They used to write, they used to etch in the beams, which one goes next to which one. So therefore, they would write on it, like you have, you know, people have for their sukkah, how do they know what board goes next to what board? They would write on it, and that's the makor in the Mishkan. V'kosev os bezu v'os bezu, u'mochik pa'amim shetah. Sometimes the erasure is for the purpose of rewriting, because sometimes they wrote 1, 2, 3, 4, or we'll see in the Gemara what they wrote exactly, it's not so clear. And then, you know, accidentally the guy, the Kohen, was writing it and he got the wrong number, so he erases it and then rewrites it. So that's also part of the construction of the Mishkan. Fine. Mechabe umavir, extinguishing and igniting. Be'esh, Rashi says, in the fire, where do you have burning in the Mishkan? Shetachas hadud, underneath the dud, the cauldron, shel samamonim, of the spices. Last case, makah b'patish. What is makah b'patish? Hu gemar kol malacha. That is the finishing touch. Literally the word makah means to hit, with a patish, with a hammer. That's the final hammer blow. So it's the finishing touch, which is the end of every malacha. What? Shekein uman makeh bekurnus ala sadin lahachliko begemar malacha. So this is interesting. The actual makor for this is from the fact that the uman hits the sadan, the block, to make sure that it's smooth, so that the next time you put something on there, it will be smooth. That's the source. The source is from hitting the chopping block to make it smooth. To make it smooth, the gemar malacha, and that finishes, that gets it, I mean, it's completed. Umas nisin lami lo mechayiv, from our Mishnah as well, you're not obligated, you're not in violation, lay ela b'gemar malacha, only when you finish the malacha. Okay, so the next two steps, I think, if it's with your permission, I think we should do until 9:15, right? We should do an hour. Is that good? Rabbi Yosef, why don't you come and just make an introduction? I want to introduce to you, because next week I'm going to be out of town, so my chavrusa, Rabbi Yosef Schwartz, will be subbing in next Tuesday night. So we're going to be, I'll catch you up, but we'll be meeting here again next Tuesday night. I will be hopefully on my way back, but he will pick up from where we left off. But we're just going to finish the Gemara, and then I'm going to begin to drop it. I'll fill you in tomorrow. But I wanted you to get to meet my chavrusa. Okay. All right. I'll see you later. So maybe before we turn the page, we're not going to do every Tosfos, because I think that some of them get a little bit long, and maybe we need to keep moving. Yeah. But I will occasionally bring things to your attention that don't necessarily come off the text, but I think it's interesting to keep them in mind. Another man to meet in your list. You should keep a list of personalities, because I think it's worthwhile. There was a man who died about 15 years ago, a very special man, also interestingly a Chabad Chassid, and his name is Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Zevin. He lived in Yerushalayim. He was the author of a very eclectic group of books. He wrote Hasidic Tales, Tales of Hasidim, published by Artscroll, also in English. He also wrote several halachic biographies of rabbis over the last 200 years. He wrote a very wonderful book, I recommend it, on halacha and the holidays, called Moadim B'Halacha. He also wrote on the Torah, called Torah of the Moadim. He wrote a lot of different things. One of the things he wrote was a book of collected essays on different halachic topics called L'Or HaHalacha. And in here, he has an interesting discussion about Shabbos and about malachas on Shabbos. And one of the things, I don't remember if he brings it up in this essay or not, could be discussed in light of our Mishnah.
Because there's something interesting. If I would have written this Mishnah, let's say, I would have probably written, what are the 39 categories of work? I probably would have written writing, sowing, plowing, planting. But that's not exactly the way it's written.
The person who does.
Exactly. Your name again?
My name?
Yeah. What's that?
Sharon.
Last name?
Goldberger.
Goldberger. Okay, great. Okay. So, exactly. This diuk of Mrs. Goldberger is perhaps an insight into an interesting machlokas that Rav Zevin brings up here. It's a very interesting perspective that he has. It's really a book about global issues in halacha. One is about Shemitah, another one is about Masorah, a lot of different things. So he asked the following question when it comes to Malacha on Shabbos. What exactly is the requirement of Shvisa on Shabbos? Is the requirement of Shvisa that no Malacha exists in the world? Or is the requirement of Shvisa that I not do malacha? But we really don't care if something is created. If somebody does work out there, I don't really care. It's not that Hashem wants the world to rest, it's that I have to rest. It's not really about the universe. That's the Chakira, the question that he raises.
Which would really practically basically be the issue of a Shabbos goy, wouldn't it?
Oh, very good, thank you. So Sarah already picks up on this question. This is a discussion. This is one of the flashpoints. Is what the prohibition that we call Amira La'akum. Amira La'akum, the Gemara says, is an Issur D'Rabbanan to ask a Gentile, a non-Jewish person, to do a malacha for you on Shabbos. So what is that malacha? What is that Issur Amira La'akum? It's an Issur D'Rabbanan. And there are several different makoras as to what exactly is the source of that Issur. One Rashi seems to say in Avodah Zarah, if I'm not mistaken, on Daf Yedzayin, Tezayin, something like that, Rashi says it's a violation of Dapir Davar. You're not allowed to speak about doing a malacha. So for example, on Shabbos, one should not say, tonight I'm going to drive to my neighbor's house. Because you shouldn't speak about doing a malacha on Shabbos. That's something we should not do on Shabbos. So let's say if I'm going to say, I'm going to be at your house on Saturday night, I would say, I'm going to go to your home on Saturday night. I wouldn't say, I'm doing a malacha. I'm going to do a malacha. That's Dabar Dabar. It manages the way that we speak on Shabbos. So if I ask the non-Jewish person, please turn on the air conditioner for me. So I'm telling them, turn on the air conditioner. Other suggestions are maybe, I will come to do it myself. It's a gezeira. Maybe I'll do it myself. A lot of different suggestions. So some achronim suggest, wait a second. From the fact that we have to come on to this new concept of Amir La'akum, that should tell us something. Because there is a Gemara in Bava Metzia that raises an interesting principle. We have a general principle that usually, for most areas of halacha, non-Jews, Gentiles, cannot serve as a shaliach, as an agent, to do something on my behalf. That's usually the rule. Ein shlichus la'akum. Non-Jews are not subject to the rules of shlichus, of agency. However, the Gemara does have a comment in Bava Metzia that yesh shlichus la'akum l'chumra. In many instances, we should treat an agent who is not Jewish as my agent. So for example, if I were to try to send ribis, to send interest through a non-Jewish person, even though me'ikra din ein shlichus la'akum l'chumra, perhaps we should say that I'm in violation, again, l'chumra, of paying somebody interest, even though the courier is not Jewish. Okay, that's the discussion over there. So some raise the question, why do I need a new isser of amira la'akum? Shouldn't I just say yesh shlichus la'akum l'chumra? Isn't the Akum doing the malacha on my behalf? So if he's doing the malacha on my behalf, it's like I'm sending interest to you. So some say, aha, you see, it must be that we don't really care if malacha happens in the world. I don't really care. Because even if you say, yesh lichos la'akum l'chumra, I am at rest. I'm not doing the malacha. Memela, I'm okay. That's all we care about. Says the Balatanya, another fine figure to meet, the first Lubavitch Rebbe, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, in his take on this, he actually disagrees.
The Baal HaTanya, in his Shulchan Aruch, he has his own, some of you know, the Baal HaTanya, Chabad Hasidim followed their own Shulchan Aruch, which is predicated obviously on Rabbi Yosef Karo, but says the Shulchan Aruch Harav, he says, no, that is the reason for Amir La'akam. The reason why you're not allowed to ask another non-Jew to do a malacha for you is because of you, there is more malacha that's being created in the world. There is more activity that's going on. There is not shvisa in the world. Hence, says the Baal HaTanya, there would be an isur of shvisa mimalacha. I'll just close with one more raya, that one more point that Rav Zevin says, and then you'll see how I think this relates to our Mishnah. The Gemara says, it has a comment that en ner shehidlik akum b'shabbos ein mevorchem olav motzei Shabbos. You can't make the bori meri ha'esh on a light that was kindled on Shabbos by a non-Jew. Why? So the Gemara has a comment, shalosh shavas mimeleches avera. This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch in the Rambam and in the Turin Shulchan Aruch in Reish Sarichas. So some want to bring a raya from this. What do you mean, shalosh shavas mimeleches avera on Shabbos? Who lit the fire on Shabbos? My next door neighbor, John O'Connor. He's not required to follow the laws of Shabbos. In fact, he's adjured from observing the laws of Shabbos. It must be that the fact that there was a light that was kindled on Shabbos, that must have some chalos, some level of malacha that was done, even if it wasn't done by a Jewish person. Perhaps that too is considered by the Gemara. Why? Because that would take sides on this chakira to suggest that the isser is that the world should be at rest, and therefore we should minimize the amount of malachas that will exist anywhere in the world. But perhaps from our Mishnah you could make the opposite case. Because I would suggest that if I were writing this Mishnah, I would have said he probably should say Hazuria, Hacharisha, the planting or the plowing in a global sense. But no, it doesn't say that. It says Hazorea, Hachorish. It sounds like it's more in related to the person who is doing the plowing, who is doing the Maisa Malacha. So it seemed to me that this would weigh in. Again, the purpose of this shir is not to take side halach lemaisa on anything, but I think that this lashon could be an interesting perspective on that general hakira. So just to summarize what we spoke about today, we went through the Mishnah with the lamates avos malacha. Rashi pointed out to us all the cases that they are found in the Mishnah. We pointed out, based on the kasha of Tosis, and many of you ha'osu shnei botim here, that there are perhaps two levels of shiurim when it comes to Shabbos, and maybe that's why some have a given shiur and some do not, because there might be a difference between a shiur nekuda and a shiur bekamos. Anything less than a shiur nekuda is not a malacha at all, as opposed to a shiur bekamos, let's say. So a shiur nekuda, an example, would be kosev shteosios. Shiur bekamos, an example, would be boneh. The nafkamina would be, if you assume that there's a violation of a chatzi shiur, that chatzi shiur would not apply to the shiur nekuda, it would only apply to the shiur be'echos. And finally, this interesting, that was where we discussed the Rabbi Chavar and that whole issue. Finally, this last question that Rav Zevin raises from the Baal HaTanya and other Achronim, whether this is a general principle that there should be Shvisa in the world, or there should be specifically only Shvisas HaGafra. So next week in Mirtz Hashem, we're going to move on collectively to the Minyan Olamali, and I look forward to greeting you in Mirtz Hashem on my return in 2 weeks. Any questions as we wrap it up? Yeah.
So you said you're writing the mission, so you'd say these are the 39 malachos, etc. But it doesn't say that, because 49 is one.
Oh, okay. So that also is that also is odd. So that 40 minus 1 is interesting, because that actually appears elsewhere in Shas. That appears very good. When it comes to the issue of Malchios, when it says in the Torah, Arbon Yalkenu Lo Yosef, it means 39 lashes, according to most. Right, according to...
Because they're sets of threes.
Right, well, they're sets of threes because we assume that they're 39. Right? With the way that we darsh in the psukim is that we break it down Arbon plus Arach. So it could be that this is a rabbinic language which we borrowed from there as to what is the 39. So there may be a connection to it. It may have to do with the way that the... I can't say that I know for sure. One may suggest that the role of the Arbon plus Arachas is to demonstrate the fact that these Malachos are not written anywhere, but the Rabbanan are giving them to us based, essentially based on a Mesorah. It's the same way that we darshaned Al Pi Torah Shebaal Peh, that 40 in the Pesukim becomes 39, so too here, we rely on the rabbis to tell us that these are the 39 Malachos. That's just a suggestion, but I don't know if that has any basis for it. That's a possibility.
Could it be in any way related to the fact that the Mishnah was oral for so long, that was just a memory tool, that they remembered it?
Yes, certainly could be. Certainly could be. All right, thank you so much for joining. Have a wonderful evening.
All right. Yeah.